This podcast is not suitable for children or those who are easily disturbed. Spoiler warning for whatever is in the title of this episode.
And now for the obligatory socials. Please like, share and subscribe. You can find the podcast on Twitter at HorrorPod69. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Slasher and Goodreads. Become part of the Disturbed community by asking for the Facebook group and Discord links. Send dick pics to thehorrorofbabylonpodcast@gmail.com. Support the show at patreon.com/thehorrorofbabylon. In closing, you can let your friends know that The Horror of Babylon is available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible and all other major podcast apps.
Welcome to a very Germanic bonus episode of The Horror of Babylon, where we review The Werewolf by Amakatsu. I am Ryan, and with me, as always, is Daniel. Say hi, Daniel.
Hi, Daniel.
And Hef's here, too.
Guten Tag.
And thank you to our patrons, Abigail the First, Breaker of Chains, Mother of Dragons, and
Logan,
the Full Metal Patron.
And Ben,
the Fourth
Patron of Hope. And Four Horsemen Comics and Gaming, which you can visit at the Morgantown Mall in Morgantown, West Virginia, Mall Robinson in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, or a hollowed-out tree in the magical forest in the Rhineland. And if you are there, say hello to the woodcutter himself, Ronald III, Grampus of Christmas, or, as he's more often referred to around Four Horsemen, the cheese cutter, as opposed to the woodcutter. That man can crop dust like no one, maybe aside from Dusty Crop Popper. Just saying.
Long swishes.
As usual, when Hef is here, we like to get an update on what's going on with the Horror of Babylon Plays, which is our Let's Play series that Hef releases every Wednesday on YouTube. But also, Hef and his better half, Jackie, have also started running a TikTok account for us. So, Hef, if you can give us a rundown on what's going on in both of those platforms.
Okay. The Let's Play YouTube is going well. We got getting ready to wrap up Medieval. That one's been a fun run. We're going to be doing Portal next. Definitely a throwback, but I hadn't played it in about 10 years. Wanted to give it another try. But as far as that, I mean, same as usual. Just let me know what you like. If you give me tips, I can definitely do more. As far as the TikTok, I have discovered how old I am. That is a medium that I was not prepared for at all whenever we started doing that. Thankfully, my wife is much more worldly than I am when it comes to, the new age stuff. But TikTok's been, it's been an adventure. It's still an adventure.
If you're opposed to TikTok but want to see our videos, they're also released as shorts on YouTube and reels on Facebook and Instagram. Some of them make it onto Twitter, some of them do not, because Twitter has very weird video requirements.
Now, that being said, the TikTok audience has been very receptive. I get a lot, most of the time whenever I'm posting, I get likes pretty quickly. People are always real nice with their comments. I have yet to meet a person who has been rude or anything like that. So it's like the TikTok community seems very good.
You can't say the same about our YouTube comments.
No, you can't.
I think those are kind of funny, but
I mean, except for the one that called us warmongers, yes. So trigger warning, obviously the Holocaust, World War II, Nazis, pretty prevalent in the story. Also, brutal murder. Well, actually, we don't really know, but supposed murder of a child.
Supposed, yeah.
Definite murder of a wife.
Yeah, for sure.
The use of leather.
And then our history with Amakatsu and the short story The Werewolf, which I'm going to say now, is the rule for this, the original rule was going to be, is you have to say Werewolf. With a German accent. If you say it without one, the original rule was going to be you're not allowed to talk for the rest of the episode. I've amended that to you're not allowed to speak for 5 minutes, and I will actually put a timer up. And even if somebody says something that you really disagree with, or you can't talk 5 minutes. So you have to say werewolf with a German accent. It can be a bad one, and it can even be one that accidentally turns into an Australian accent halfway through.
That's what mine sound like. Yeah,
but so. The point is, you have to try.
Yeah.
You just developed a podcast drinking game.
Yeah, and I actually had to correct some of Daniel's social media posts.
Yeah.
Because he spelled it wrong. It's not spelled W E R E. It's W E H R because it's werewolf.
I Americanized it.
Yeah. But real quick, so I previously had read one of her novel, The Hunger. She is famous for historical fiction with a horror twist. She did a novel called The Hunger, which is the story of the Donner Party, but instead of freezing to death and starving to death and eating each other, they get attacked by werewolves. She also did The Deep, which is about the Titanic, but it's attacked by a sea monster instead of hitting an iceberg. And she did a story that took place in Japanese internment camps in World War II, but they are exposed to like a deadly like Captain Trip style virus.
Ooh, neat. That,
yeah, it's pretty cool. I've read one of her novels before and really liked it, so when I saw this short story had been published and it was on sale, I immediately bought 3 copies of it and said it can't be worse than sent the other 2 copies to you guys.
And that's my experience with this novel.
Well, my experience was you sent me that, and then I spent 20 minutes trying to figure out how the fuck I get my book.
How do I get my book?
Every time he sends me something, I have to go through that process again. I'm like, I know that it's not as hard as I'm making it out to be.
The vampire's a pure myth, superstition. I may be able to bring you proof that the superstition of yesterday can become the scientific reality of today.
Let's jump into background. This short story.
A background for what now?
The werewolf.
Thank you.
You can't bait it if he knows it's coming. Come on.
What are you going to do if I can't talk in the background section? For which I wrote 0 notes.
Oh, if that happens, my plan is to just sit here in silence for 5 minutes.
And I'll leave it in. No editing.
That's the plan.
This short story was published September 29th, 2022, so it's not quite 1 year old. It is available on Kindle and from Audible. So if you want to listen to it or read it, that's where you check it out. It is written by Amakatsu, who I didn't realize until today is from Alaska, which just makes her even cooler than she already was.
Oh, that's my 35th favorite state.
Yeah. It's like probably my 5th or 6th.
Yeah, it's actually state. It's probably pretty high. It's why I want to retire.
You couldn't handle the cold.
I can't. If I can handle the Texas heat, I can handle the cold.
You who dry hump your heater every winter in West Virginia.
Yeah.
No, you didn't.
I'll marry a big bear.
So just some quick things on her. She went to fucking Johns Hopkins University to get her master's degree. She also used to work in like anti-terrorist task force. I don't know enough about her background to get super into her, but she's a pretty cool lady.
Has lived kind of a life.
Yeah. And some of her novels, like I mentioned, The Hunger, which I have read, is very good. The Deep. She used to write paranormal romance, and then for whatever reason, she switched to horror historical fiction, which I'm all about. The Deep, she was a finalist for the Bram Stoker Award for Superior Achievement in a Novel, and she was also the finalist for the Locust Award for Best Horror Novel. And for her second novel, The Reckoning, she got a Goodreads Reader's Choice Award. So,
neat.
Some of her accolades.
And that's that. Another story in the classic infallible 3-act structure. Good enough for Aristotle, good enough for The Simpsons.
Mr. Sizlak, I have a feeling there's going to be one more act to this story.
Well, I'm not hanging around for that. 4 acts.
All right, so let's jump into structure and themes. There is a metaphor in this book.
What?
And what's the story we read?
The werewolf.
Okay. He's too good. He's too good.
I'm the sharpest butter knife you'll ever see.
I'll drag you across my toast any morning.
Yeah.
Toast is my nickname in prison.
So in Nazi Germany, you could really classify people in 4 groups. There were the perpetrators, the Nazis, the people who were actively committing atrocities. There were the victims, the Jews, the Romani, the homosexuals, the trade unionists, the Catholics, the people who were the primary object of those atrocities. And then there, the third group would be the German citizens who actively resisted the Nazis, who hid their Jewish neighbors, who disrupted Nazi supply routes, who dispersed anti-Nazi propaganda, people who actively tried to combat the Nazis. And then the fourth group, the largest group by far, is what this book is about, and it's the bystanders, the people who lived in Nazi Germany and were not Nazi soldiers, were not active members in the party, but also did nothing to resist the Nazis and their politics, their actions, their rise, their... So the metaphor is, and it's, I guess, kind of the confusing part, is that the werewolves are a metaphor themselves for Nazis.
The what?
Oh, shit.
No, he wasn't talking, but he didn't name the title of the book. So,
all right, well, I'm not going to talk for 5 minutes. Daniel has to continue what I was saying.
Hold on. So, tell me what you learned from the metaphor, Daniel. So that I didn't pick up on.
So the metaphor for the werewolves is not only are they a metaphor for the Nazis themselves, but how people who are complacent when evil's going on around them will become monsters themselves. Oh my god, the timer.
Yeah, it goes in seconds, Daniel.
What happens if we all fuck up?
I won't fuck up.
Okay, well, let me look at this. Where are we at here? Okay, so we have werewolves and Germanic lore.
Under structures and themes.
Yes, under structures and themes. Yeah, this Ryan looks so, so exacerbated. I don't know what to do.
I do.
Go ahead.
I don't know anything about Germanic lore or anything really like that. I did like in how, as far as like the structure and everything like that, I like how everything was very... Like, this is a story that didn't have to, like, go too out of its way when it came to, you know, time jumps or various other things that typically, like, we deal with whenever it comes to, like, reading novels, like, mm-hmm. in this kind of genre. They kind of just jump around and do things. Whereas this one, very much, it's very linear, but it immerses you into kind of, like, the darkness of the world that it's actually in trying to encapsulate, which, considering the fact it's Nazi Germany, I mean, you're already kind of in a dark mm-hmm. place anyway. So having the werewolves storyline be mixed with it feels very much something that's in a homage to it. And I think it's actually kind of cool because, I don't know, like, Nazis are just, to me, like, one of the best ways to get away with anything supernatural because of how a lot of the stuff that they did was kind of just to test the limits of what is believed by humans. It's really just one of those, I mean, he's over here imitating Muhammad Ali, and I don't know.
I have no idea what he
was. He's losing his goddamn mind.
Give him your pen.
I don't have a pen.
He gave you a warrior Babylon.
Oh, he did. You're right. Okay, here.
And Indiana Jones. Yes, that's a movie.
Indiana Jones uses Nazis all the time, and it's always rewards us for it.
Oh.
He just shotgunned 8 beers at once, my god!
I forgot Nazis were in that movie.
Two of them. They are in the fourth one, aren't they? I didn't watch that one. I haven't seen it. I had plans and it didn't happen.
Everything...
If you want to save this episode, you better start talking.
No, this is great.
No, it's not.
Everything I learned about werewolves and how they relate to Germanic lore came from this book. I enjoyed the sort of a storybook framing, how he would read to his daughter, you know, about the wolves in the woods. Was it Little Red Riding Hood? Yeah, it was mm-hmm. Little Red Riding Hood that he would read to her, which is probably the biggest and most overused story in werewolf stories, but it is what it is. It works. Like, what other story are you gonna use? Oh, the Three Little Pigs. Yeah, Yeah, Ryan's very good at charades.
But I'm not familiar with a lot of German folklore. Or werewolf.
How was I not the first one to fuck up? Ryan, how much time do you have left? It has got to have been more than that. I guess I will go back to talking about the structure and themes. We have World War II, the Nazis, and the Holocaust. Toxic masculinity, that's a much better topic. I relate to that one. Toxic masculinity, ladies and gentlemen. Something I feel every man has been exposed to at least once. Often gets confused. It depends on who you're talking to or who's framing the conversation with actual masculine traits. Toxic masculinity, at least in my experience, is usually that machismo, I have to prove myself to other men culture, which this book does very well. You have the main character who is this yes ma'am, no ma'am to his wife guy, didn't have a father figure, who has a loving wife, a daughter.
But hey, I can talk. I set a 5-hour timer.
Yeah, I was wondering. I thought that was the minute. I was like, it's been more than 6.
It's been about 7 minutes. Okay, I'm good. I'll keep going with what you're doing.
Okay. But this guy, he very desperately wants male approval. And in my very limited experience, men without father figures do seek out male approval.
He was also ostracized from the children's cliques because he was sickly, so mm-hmm. he couldn't participate in, like, the games they would play. And you would imagine, as, like, rural children mm-hmm. in, like, the early 1900s Germany, they would probably be playing outside in the woods, running, jumping, doing physical activities.
And I was am asthmatic, so I can relate to that. I understand what it's like whenever... I never gravitated towards sports, but maybe you want to play with your friends, but it's hard to keep up. I really sort of related to that. German identity is really big in this book.
The Nazis were in power for 12 years, and they were a movement for many years before that.
Mm-hmm.
And this book takes place in 1945, towards the
tail end,
tail end of the war. And these people have had their German responsibility, their Aryan responsibility, hammered into them by Nazi propaganda for over a decade. Mm-hmm. So even though our main character doesn't really agree with the Nazis and with Hitler and doesn't particularly like them, and he's kind of just like biding his time and taking care of his family and waiting for the Nazis to fall.
He's still a German.
He's still a German. He feels guilty that he didn't enlist and didn't join the war effort.
Yeah.
He feels guilty that he doesn't take part in the local resistance to fight the incoming allies.
Now, I will say that I think the best example of toxic masculinity... What was the villain's name again?
Hans.
Hans. Okay.
Same as Frozen.
Okay, so Hans was in the army, but pretty much defected.
Mm-hmm.
And
he was a deserter.
But just still kind of props himself up as this big machismo guy.
He was a deserter who actually went back home and lied about it and said his unit was disbanded.
And acted like a war hero.
Which makes, like, literal zero sense. At this point in time, Germany had been invaded by the United Kingdom, the United States, and the USSR.
Yeah, that's a bad position to be in.
If their unit disbanded for whatever reason, they would be reassigned to other units. They wouldn't send you fucking home.
Yeah, they'd be like, hey, we need you over here.
But, like, the German army is in such fucking chaos, welcome back, Hef, that nobody can call him on it. He can just say whatever he wants, even though everyone knows he's lying.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. You even see things like that around here where people will be like, I serve my country, and they act like it gives them some sort of very big privilege. And I'm not saying that it's not good to serve your country.
No shade against veterans.
But I'm talking about a very specific subsect where you maybe did your 2 years and then you act like the entire world owes you something, even if you didn't really do anything.
Right. And that's a hard... I agree with you, and I know people... I have met people like that.
You know the person I'm trying to describe.
But that's a hard topic to discuss.
To dance around, yeah.
Yeah.
Because, again, I'm very pro, if you want to serve your country, like, we have an open enlistment system. Mm-hmm. I'm like, go do it. Yes. Be proud of the things that you do, mm-hmm. but...
It's almost a religious stance.
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically... I mean, to a degree, like, military and religion do share similar qualities, I think.
Yeah.
And both of them require you to give a piece of yourself that you normally wouldn't give under normal circumstances.
Now, doctrine, discipline, self-sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what did you want to talk about under World War II, the Nazis, and the Holocaust?
Just in general. No, these are the themes of the story.
Okay,
the first theme are werewolves. The second themes are World War II. Like, it's not that hard.
Okay. Well, I was like, was I missing something in there?
I was.
These are the themes.
Yeah, they are themes that happen in the story.
We're just discussing the themes, the structure and themes.
It really shows you, especially, I mean, we talked about that with German identity, mm-hmm. is what, like, the Nazi Party did to the German identity.
Yeah.
Which was already kind of a militaristic sort of identity from, like,
Prussia.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I used to know this shit.
Something that a lot of people don't know about German history is that Germany itself is actually, like, a relatively young country. In fact, it's younger than the United States of America. What we know as Germany was a collection of different states.
Mm-hmm.
Prussia, Bavaria, all these different little old kingdoms. And they actually didn't unite and become the country of Germany until after the United States had become a country. What year was that? 1871.
Yeah.
So we had been a country for almost 100 years by that point.
Yeah.
If you think about it, it's kind of similar to our history where we were a bunch of, like, colonies
states, yeah.
and states. And, you know, each of our colonies or states has its own kind of identity.
And that's something that's still kind of a big thing.
Yeah, like somebody from California or somebody from New York or somebody from Alabama or somebody from Georgia, like very different identities. One thing that the Nazis did for the German people is they...
United identity.
They gave them a united identity to get behind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one of the few things I actually do know. Now that you can talk again, I can actually get this out and be like, okay, this is what we're discussing.
Yeah, because it helps to have two people for a podcast.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's just Daniel rambling into a mic.
What were your kind of takeaways in terms of themes? Or do you want to talk to the small town horror kind of aspect of it?
Again, I mentioned earlier before I killed myself.
Daniel, what are we reading?
The Werewolf. Okay.
That I thought that this was... I was surprised by, like, how well this story kind of, like, enveloped all of its different things it was trying to do. From, like, the Nazis, the time period, the werewolves themselves. I just like how all of that just really felt pretty... It was just interwoven very well. I was very impressed with, like, just really how the story went along. And you really did feel like you were reading an old-timey German tale. And the inclusion of... I know this is going to sound kind of bad, but, like, Nazis are just so fascinating.
They are very fascinating.
I don't want to say their lore, but it kind of is.
I mean, they have basically kept the History Channel alive for 30 years.
But, I mean, generally anything involving them, because it's always, like, apeshit, right? Like, it's always off the wall.
Nazis and aliens.
And because they're Nazis, you can kind of get, like, the idea that, like, it doesn't matter how, like, fantastic or magnificent it is, because the Nazis were seeking out a lot of stuff specifically to prove that these existed.
Hitler had a real and documented fascination with the occult, and he did have scientists and teams of people who had explored these things, just like in Raiders of the Lost Ark. So it is not a stretch to imagine that they did have, like, a unit of werewolves. Mm-hmm. But more than that, like, storytellers since the 1940s have used that to really, I think, at least as far as I know, starting with Raiders of the Lost Ark, have used that to tell, like, these supernatural stories featuring Nazis and it's just generally it goes over really well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah, it's over the top, but these are people that have a belief. They believe it. Like,
and,
they believe
and
it.
And they be, are yeah. absolutely over the top.
Oh,
themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like it matches the. It encapsulates everything that's trying to do in it.
Yeah. These are the people who committed the worst atrocities that are also the best documented atrocities mm-hmm. in history.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So possibly like worse things were done maybe in the Crusades, but they're not as well documented and they weren't on as grand a scale. The thing about the Nazis is they did these horrible atrocities, but
they wrote them down.
They wrote them down. They were super organized about them and they did them on a very large scale.
Yes.
But you don't come here to learn that the Holocaust was bad. You already know that. So
hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're not, please don't listen to our podcast.
Toxic masculinity is very much that one's pretty to me that's the most on the nose one. Like just because of Hans himself is just so like they make it a point in the story to like you know from the beginning that Hans is basically a coward that came back after he failed. And is just like, hey, I have this belt now.
He wants to prove he has the big dick energy.
He does, and like he very much utilizes that against his fellow man. And that to me, I think, is like the most on the nose thing. But it works.
It works really well.
It works really well.
It's like the dude who never got over his football jersey still picking fights at bars at 35.
I was going to say, he's that guy you know from high school. Because everybody has one of those guys from high school.
Mm-hmm. Who just never got over where they thought they peaked.
Except for ours. Our...
Fuck.
I thought I was the one who made dark jokes.
He's not wrong. God damn. I don't know. I wasn't ready for that at all.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Let's go to characters. There are a lot of characters, but I only really have two. We can talk some of the tertiary ones in relation to these, but the first one is Uwe. Who's our protagonist. Daniel, what do you think of Uwe?
He's Aaron Yeager. He was a good boy until he wasn't.
I thought Aaron did nothing wrong.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great meme, but come on.
Thank you! Thank you!
Oh.
He murdered fucking children, you son of a bitch! Okay, all right. Kef, what did you think of Uwe?
I think it's really good for me that this was an audiobook. Otherwise, I would have been calling him Ume for...
Yeah.
I was just about to ask, is that actually how it's spelled?
I got the Kindle. Okay. It might be Uwe. I couldn't remember, but it doesn't look
Which
like...
Which is still not how it sounds.
It doesn't look like Uwe at all.
Something about having beer in my system just really makes me want nuts.
Oh, it's salt.
Okay, it's Uwe.
That would have been worse. It's Uwe. it's just U.
No, because...
That would not have let me take him seriously at all.
Because the W in Werewolf, you also make that noise.
I'm going to present this to both of you. Feel free to jump in. Is Uwe a sympathetic character?
I can understand how a person gets to that point.
Same. As a person who struggled trying to figure out who they were when they were young. I mean, I know all kids do that. They all struggle to figure out who they are. That's just how it works. But impressionable is something that, like, you know, with children, it's much more on the nose about things, and it's less deep of thought. It's more just of wanting to be accepted.
It's also more forgivable when a child is influenced.
Right. With Uwe, it's much more like... It's an adult need for acceptance.
Yeah.
Like, he has the love of his wife. He has the love of his daughter. But camaraderie, brotherhood, these are things that kind of passed him by when he was...
As Jackie would say, he needs his guy time.
Yeah. And Uwe is very much like an individual that, like, for the most of his probably youthful and adult life, it just passed him by because he wasn't among the toxic masculinity culture that existed in that time frame. So it's understandable. However, I don't necessarily think I could say he is someone who could be forgiven either. So I understand him, but I don't forgive him, if that summarizes.
So, and I assume both of you are the understanding about him becoming a werewolf and joining the pack and participating in their activities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What about him as a bystander in Nazi Germany, being somebody who, in terms of his inner dialogue, is anti-Nazi and is just kind of biding his time for the party to fall, but does nothing to actively resist the Nazi party?
I feel like that's a landmine, because I really feel like I would need to know more information. Like, because he was a sickly dude, right? He said, but he also said that he wanted to enlist, or regretted not enlisting.
He didn't. He wasn't drafted.
Yeah.
The story, and I think this is just plot convenience, but yeah. It says he got a rare exemption because he was in charge of his mother's care.
Mm-hmm.
I think in reality, he would have absolutely been drafted.
Yeah.
But I think that's how she wrote it to make the story work.
Yeah. I have not been a man in a fascist dystopia who has had to face these decisions. So even against a fictional character, sometimes I have to go, well, okay, how much did you know versus how much could you actually control? Trying to resist on certain levels would not only get you killed, but your wife and family killed, which is also how they control you.
Contemporary Holocaust studies are generally very harsh on that fourth group, the bystanders, the people who did nothing. The Holocaust is like the worst thing that has happened in modern times. And if you were if you knew that this was happening to your neighbors and you did nothing to stop it, then you were partially responsible. However, part of me also says, as I can tell myself, that if I were living in that time period and I was living in Berlin and we were regular German folks and our neighbors were Jewish, and they got a knock on their door one night, and I heard it, and maybe I could, like, go out there and do something to stop, but it would probably, or could possibly lead to the death of my wife and children, would I have done it? I'd like to think I would have tried to help, but the truth is, maybe I wouldn't have, because...
It's very easy for people to say they would do something when they've never been in the position.
I may have decided in the moment that preserving the life of my family was more important than risking their lives to possibly save another family. I'm not saying that's right or that's wrong. I'm just saying I don't know what I would have done. And Uwe, it doesn't get into any specifics about, like, they all said that, yes, we had neighbors who were taken.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there were people in their village who they lost. It doesn't get into a lot of the specifics so that you can, like, actually judge Uwe by what did or didn't happen. It's very general, but it does make you think about, is he sympathetic? Is he empathetic? And another point that I wanted to make is, not in his defense, but just in, like, in a vacuum, you don't know that you're in a historical event while it's happening. The people... Like, Uwe, while this was happening, didn't know he was in the Holocaust.
Yeah.
It was just what was happening, and we can look back... I don't want to sound like I'm defending bystanders, but... I'm just saying it's tough.
You're approaching the topic with a nuanced perspective where most people do not want nuance.
Yeah.
I prefer nuance, but...
It's just... It's gray... And it's worth discussing. And I think it makes him a very human character.
Yeah.
As opposed to somebody who is obviously good or obviously bad. On top of that, in addition to maybe he didn't do anything to actively resist the Nazis because he was sickly and because he was protecting his wife and children, but also he has this yearning to be a part of a group. So maybe he didn't do anything to protect his Jewish neighbors because subconsciously he liked rhetoric and the patriotism of the Nazi Party, mm-hmm. and he wanted to be a part of that.
I think it's a human question more than anything else, mainly just because he... So taking your, you know, taking your question into consideration basically is asking where is your line? Like, that's the question we're overall asking here, is you being a bystander something to be condemned or something to be overlooked? And really, I think it comes down to, as far as a person, most of the people I would say that would be asked that question probably also aren't asked the question, did you have family? Did you have somebody to care for? Did you have somebody to care for you, kind of thing? Because if single men in the military, for instance, probably were more likely to go against the Nazi regime at the time because they only had themselves and they could yearn for fighting a greater cause. Whereas when you have a family, not only your priorities change, but your world shifts. So you're more concerned with the world you have at home, your wife, your kids, you know. These are things that are in your immediate control that immediately affect your life's outcome. As a soldier with no family, what you know is, even if you don't directly confront it, is you are fighting an overall grand fight. Whereas being a family unit, you have only one focused objective, which is to keep your family safe.
Whatever decision you make as a father, you always have to consider how it affects your family first and foremost.
And that's where I would say is, like, it's like for Uwe, to me, like, his acts as a family man are what I don't forgive. His acts as a bystander, I'm not going to say I forgive it, but at the same time, I'm not as judgmental about it.
Yeah. I don't think there's a yes or a no or a black or a white on this. I just think it's
an interesting thing to talk about.
Yeah, and it's worth discussing. Okay, so let's talk about Hans. And we already talked about Hans a little bit in the first one. He's the... And when we were talking about toxic masculinity... Daniel, how does he rank for you in terms of, like, short story villains?
I thought you were going to ask, where does he rank for Nazis for me?
Pretty low.
Where does he rank as childhood bullies,
pretty
Daniel?
Low. Below Goebbels and Himmler and...
Below everybody in Helsing. He's okay. I mean, he's serviceable. He's very on the nose. I'm very obviously not a great dude. Which, I mean, okay, those guys exist. People with very toxic attitudes and hero complexes exist. I've had to fucking deal with them.
I think in terms of, like, story and character, he's not particularly remarkable. But in terms of effectiveness and being able to relate to a villain and equate it to somebody you've faced in your own life, he's one of the most effective, like,
yeah,
villains I've read. Because everybody has known a Hans.
Everybody has known a Hans.
Everybody has dealt with a Hans.
That should be our next shirt. Everyone has known a Hans.
Occasionally, some people, their Hans...
God, I want hot dogs.
We can go get hot dogs. Or we can Uber hot dogs. That's fine. Half, what do you think of Hans?
He's still on the hot dogs. The Veridogs, if you will. The Hot Devils.
I think Hans is actually one of the better written characters, like, as far as a book I've read in recent memory. Mainly just because it's like you said, he's a very good encapsulation of, like, somebody you're supposed to just not like. He's supposed to feed on that, you know, toxic masculinity that everybody has experienced in one way, shape, or form, especially if you have never actually been the one to dole it out rather than you just had to take it. What I like about Hans is he's also very, I think he's a surprisingly real character, like, in this book. So, yeah, you know these people, and in your own mind, to a degree, you can kind of, like, over-exaggerate some of your bullies sometimes. Not always, but sometimes. Hans is not over-exaggerated. He mm-hmm. is, like, they make it a point to say everybody knows he's not only a dick, but he's a dick that has no reason to be as big of a dick as he is. And his methodology, his behavior, everything is very focused around him just trying to overcompensate when you clearly know that he's got a fault that he can't walk away from. And I like that they don't really, like, try to delve into him too much. They just make him kind of a guy who doesn't fit where he is, and he's just trying to get to a point where he can actually he wants to fulfill a fantasy he can't fulfill, and, like, nobody's going to let him do it, so he's just going to aggressively take it.
I'll kill you all. I'll drive you crazy, and I'll kill you all. I'm every nightmare you ever had. I am your worst dream come true. I'm everything you ever were afraid of.
I guess let's go to Scary Shit. Is this short story scary?
It's real. Like, aside from, you know, the werewolves and the supernatural, I think this is a very real, like, the feelings in this book are very real. Being bystanders, being surrounded by toxic masculinity, these are things that people concern themselves with today.
Yeah.
Like, there were a lot of points where, like, I felt Uber. Like, I'm listening to him, and I'm like, brother, I feel you, and I felt bad for a lot of the time that we were in this book, and we were, because all the time you're just like, no, man, no, don't do that, even though you know he's gonna, like, it pulled you in.
I don't think it's very scary at all, but I do think a lot of it's unsettling.
Mm.
I think that it's scary in, like, concept, like, the concept of being pressured to join a group, being pressured to do things that you know are wrong. Like, all of that is scary, but, mm-hmm. like, the story itself, did it give me goosebumps and make me sleep with the lights on? No.
I like a lot of the scenes in it, but I don't think they're scary. Like, I love the werewolf in the basement scene.
But that is my general impression of werewolves. I can't really think of a piece of werewolf media that, like, scared me.
Yeah. Maybe as, like, a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, but...
But I love werewolves.
Yeah.
And I think they're very cool, and I'm always happy to watch a werewolf movie or read a werewolf book, but they don't scare me the way, like, you know, like, Pet Sematary scared me or
Yeah.
Yeah.
Silver Bullet scared me, but that was because of Gary Busey's teeth. have you seen that?
Yeah, I love Gary.
You know what I'm talking
Busey,
about,
yeah.
though? I mean, he... My God, it's its own character. I'm pretty sure it has its own, like, casting call in the credits.
When he books a plane, he has to buy an extra seat for his teeth.
Oh, yeah.
They're too big.
I don't think the book's trying to be scary, though. Like, I think it's just trying to...
Yeah, it just it, be like a fun, dark little fantasy.
Oh, my God. Are you Stephen King?
No, I'm Dean Koontz.
Oh.
Let's move to Kings and Koontz. Daniel, what is your king for the werewolf?
My king for the werewolf is the werewolf basement scene and the fact that it included the belt, because so many werewolf media is just, they just exist, they bite you. But this was
full moon.
Yeah, full moon. Mm-hmm. This went back to some super old ideas of, like, the devil grants you a belt and you wear it and it gives you the power of the wolf, you know.
It's old school werewolf lore.
And I just haven't seen that done in a piece of media in so long that I can't even name another one that's done it right now.
I have one in my further reading, but it's nonfiction because it's talking about, like, the actual...
That is my kink.
Hef, you're king for the werewolf.
My king is actually the werewolf transformation.
He fucked up.
He told on himself.
You know what that means?
I wasn't even gonna say anything.
We get to make up his king and coons. Also, I get to decide what kind of hot dogs he wants.
What? All right, you know what? One of us can do his king, and one will do his coons.
Which one do you want?
You pick.
I'll do his coons.
Okay. His king was all the child murder.
His coons was all the child murder because there wasn't enough of it. He loved it, but he just needed more. Absolute more. Okay, my king is the framework of the Brothers Grimm fairy tales and the actual lore of the Rhineland, which is where the legend of the werewolves kind of originates. And I'll go ahead and say it now, but I have this in further reading. The podcast Lore by Aaron Mankey, his third episode is called The Beast Within, and it's actually about the real-life historical origins of the werewolf legend. And it talks about the story with the belt and the from the Rhineland in Germany. So definitely check out Lore Episode 3. And that podcast is so huge that it actually became a TV series on Amazon Prime and a book series. So it's worth checking out. 39 minutes for hot dogs.
That sounds kind of ridiculous. the world doesn't want us to have hot dogs. My coon says that I didn't get to see them fight enough Stalinists.
So mine also relates to Stalinists. So if you, I had to verify this, but if you look at a map of Germany, the Rhineland is in Western Germany. Mm-hmm. That's the region where this takes place. And if you know about World War II history, basically what happened, how the Nazis ended up losing, is the Americans and the British and the French kind of came from the West, and the Soviets came from the East, and they just both armies just kind of slowly made their way inward towards Germany, and eventually ended up invading Germany from the West and from the East, respectively. Now, I don't know specifically that this is incorrect, but it seems very illogical to me that a Soviet soldier would be in the, like, almost like the furthest, most western part of Germany.
He got lost.
As I learned it, both armies invaded Germany from the east and the west and met in the middle in Berlin. Mm-hmm. But I don't know specifically that that is wrong.
It is time for a Berlin party. Happy birthday, Hitler.
And that's nitpicky. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Like, it's a story about werewolves. Like, it's fine. Like, this is a nitpicky thing. The truth is that this short story is really fucking sweet, and I just kind of had to be nitpicky to get a coons out of it. Oh, we get to decide how F ranks it. No, we'll let him go last. So if we finish, I think I had it as my number 2. It is my number 2, behind the Mark of the Beast and above Dracula's Guest.
It's better than Night Surf. I liked it more than the Phantom Rickshaw. Think I'm going to put it below One for the Road.
Okay, so is your new number 7 below One for the Road and above the Phantom Rickshaw? 32 seconds left on the clock. It's his number 1. All right, this is Hef's number 1 above One for the Road. So, all right, but you did enjoy the story. You liked the story.
Yeah, no, yeah. There's nothing particularly bad about it. Just there are things that I like in short stories or in writing that appealed to me from other stories more than this one.
And I like werewolves. As you can see, my number 1 and my number 2 are both werewolf stories.
Oh.
Hef can talk. It didn't do that last time.
Yeah, I was like, did someone set off a bomb?
Yeah. So I have, is your number one? Yes.
Yes, that's correct.
Is Oppenheimer in here?
No, I loved it.
Yeah, I think it's excellent. For homework, for your own short story or novel, what other extremist political group from history would you pair with a supernatural being, monster, or cryptid? What would that monster be? And explain the metaphor that you are trying to convey. Daniel, you always do your homework.
Okay, so it turns out that the rise of the Communist Party in circa World War II Russia is controlled by the Nephilim, which are half-angel, half-human creatures that were supposedly killed out during the Great Flood. And their entire goal is to remove spirituality and religion from all humanity.
I like it.
So mine involves the... There is a group called the Soldiers of Egypt. This is a radical group that is still current. Their big thing is that they actually...
Are they from Cairo, West Virginia? Sorry.
Hurricane.
Hurricane.
Hurricane. It's hurricane.
They will smite you with a thousand swords if you say it wrong.
And the people from Cairo will smite you with a thousand scimitars.
They're called the Soldiers of Egypt. They the big thing, the radical thing that they do is that they do planned attacks on specific points of government, specifically ones that have security detail. So basically they target people that have usually wealthy people that are, you know, a lot more well off than a lot of people. They're basically like rebels that have militias.
Rebels.
Yeah.
Rebels!
Now, specifically, they target people with bomb threats. The only difference being that they're not threats. They actually do it. So for my story, it would involve these particular folks, and they would invoke the power of a djinn. Because djinns, per mythology, are born of smokeless, scorching fire with no free will. So, basically, they wouldn't actually be using bombs. They would be using a djinn to blow up all of these different militias and things like that. And my story would involve this particular djinn being used as a bomb in servitude of the soldiers of Egypt. And the metaphor would be, slavery is bad.
What do they, like... rub the lamp like it's a grenade and then throw it?
No, so like since the djinn is a... and djinns are also genies a lot of the times in mythology. Like they kind of like cross over and things like that. So they are bound to servitude. So quite literally like the djinns themselves with their mystical like presence and the fact that they're smokeless beings would be the bombs themselves, and they literally just wander in after they're told to blow stuff up and they just self-ignite.
That's cool. I mean, it's not cool.
Yeah.
It's a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. Okay, so mine is a cult of personality. And specifically, it's the MAGA, or the Make America Great Again movement, the Trumpers. And the cryptid that it involves is Donald Trump, who is actually secretly the Mothman, but specifically, he is the sexed-up Mothman from Remy Cavalich's novel, like Mothman to a Flame. It's actually, his whole movement is actually just a giant metaphor for anal sex, because he just has to do everything backwards and go in the back door and do everything, subvert all expectations.
So how big is that ass? China! Size of China!
Dump truck.
Question for listeners. Round two of the Name Game Violence Edition. Winston Churchill, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, versus Winston Churchill, the cat from Pet Sematary. Hef, what's your take? How do you think this goes down?
Does Churchill the man have to be alive in this instance?
Yeah, well, I would say, like, my thoughts is that it's, like, him at his peak, which would be, like, you know, height of World War II when he had the most power.
Mm.
I guess if you wanted to interpret it that he's also reanimated just like Church, you could. I want you to have fun with it.
So, Churchill has, Churchill the man, has decided that the war is really just too much for him to handle, and even though he is in the midst of said warfare, he really needs just a weekend away. And where else would he go other than Ludlow to, you know, kind of take away his worries and take away his strife for at least a little bit of time? And it is there that he finds this wonderful cat. He doesn't like cats, but this one's got something about it that he's really, you know, it pulls him in. Where
likes
that.
The cut of its jib.
It does. So eventually, he goes to lay down. Finally, it's a point where he's like, I know how to end the war. I know how we can end this tomorrow. And Church eats him.
And then Stephen King ends the book. World War II goes on.
Yeah. Oh, no, then he comes back to his Oval Office, right? And he walks in, and his Secretary of State looks at him and goes, Churchill, I'm so glad you returned. You know, we're very excited. And he just looks at him and goes, darling. And that's how World War II ends. Whether better or for worse.
You know what I was always curious about? How did... When the Minister of Magic introduced himself to Churchill the night he took office... Like, did they just, like, immediately go into, like, World War II? Like, okay, so we got dragons, we're going to attack the Nazis, we've got, like, all these fire mages, they're all ready, they're going to do this, they're going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
What? is this a Fantastic Beast reference?
No, in Half-Blood Prince,
okay,
you find out that it's actually the opening scene of the book, that there's a new Muggle Prime Minister and Fudge, like, introduces himself.
Oh. That is a very specific reference.
Yeah. There is a little bit of a Fantastic Beasts reference in there, because you find out in Fantastic Beasts that Newt was a veteran and he worked with dragons on the Eastern Front.
I was really trying hard to think of a good Jude Law joke and I couldn't think of it.
Because nothing about that man is a joke.
Except Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow.
I've not seen that.
It's not great.
Why?
It's like, do you ever see or know of the Beowulf 3D movie?
Whatever? No. I also chose not to watch that.
That's what Sky Captain is.
Okay.
It's like CG.
Yeah, I saw the trailer. Like, I even as a kid, I chose not to watch either of those movies.
That's good choice.
Yeah.
All right. Further reading, if you like this, definitely check out some of Almakatsu's other works. I have read and enjoyed The Hunger. Like I said earlier, check out episode 3 of the podcast Lore, The Beast Within, to get some of the real history on werewolves. And also, maybe you should read The Brothers Grimm. Kind of informs a lot of the stuff that we read and discuss here on the podcast.
Yeah.
Other further readings, gentlemen?
Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow, starring Jude Law.
The Skycrawlers, from the guy who did Ghost in the Shell.
If you really want supernatural Nazis, Helsing is something I will always recommend.
Indiana Jones, anybody?
I was originally going to do a surprise you guys with the top 5 supernatural Nazis, but I decided against it.
Well, I already know 3 of my 5.
Yeah.
Supernatural Nazis? God.
Yeah.
Raiders of the Lost Ark, yeah. Last Crusade, Dial of Destiny.
Yeah. My entire top 5 was just Helsing characters.
Oh, like specific characters.
Yeah.
Do they have to be Nazis, or do they have to be just engaged with Nazis?
Yes.
Okay, that
Hans.
I don't think I could do that. I don't think I could name you supernatural Nazis off the top of my head.
Hitler from the original Wolfenstein game.
Okay, so Hitler from FDR.
Yeah.
The guy that Hitler shot from FDR.
That's the reason I decided
the guy, the one who threw his heart at the secretary.
He was German.
Why would you honestly do that?
That was the point that Beck turned it on. No.
I'm done. I'm done. But I've seen this movie like 20 times. Please watch it with me. No, I will not watch this movie.
That's what we should review for the podcast.
I was actually thinking that that might be episode 100.
Oh, that's great.
Yes. Yeah. I'm on board.
All right. So that will be episode 100.
Cemented.
Yes. Spoiler alert. That's going to be my number one movie.
Oh, God. Maybe, yeah.
More than The Ring?
Yeah, dude. Low polio legs.
My little shriveled up baby polio legs. When she fucking pulls the mustard and ketchup out of her garters, like, oh my God, that movie kills me.
Is this legal? We're the United States government. Who cares if it's legal? Fuck yeah.
I will suck every dick in this
country to get you the vote you need. That's how much I care.
I'm a repube, sir. Do you mean Republican? No, sir. It said repute, but it was an official form.
Him getting out of that fucking box on the plane every time. He can't stand up straight.
I'd say we should do a live commentary, but I think we just would laugh the whole time.
I mean, is that really the wrong answer to that movie?
No. All right.
There is no wrong answer to that movie.
Upcoming on the Horror Babylon this Sunday, our episode will be on Exorcist 2, yep. The Heretic, which Daniel and I have decided is a movie.
It is a movie that exists.
It is a movie. And then the next Sunday, September 24th, is our next novel episode, where we will be reviewing Five Nights at Freddy's. The Silver Eyes, which I found the graphic novel version of at Walmart, and I almost bought it and read it instead and just pretended I read the book. But I didn't. I'm going to read the book.
I have made a list of notes of the differences between those that I was going to quiz you on to see if you did that.
I decided if I can make it through Legion, there's zero reason why I can't make it through this.
I have a comment for this Five Nights at Freddy's book that I'm saving for when we record it.
Okay. And then our next two Thursday bonus episodes on Thursday, November 21st, the Alien-a-thon sponsored by Forestman Comics and Gaming continues with Alien versus Predator Requiem.
Or as we are going to call it, Avrick.
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 A-prick.
A-prick.
A-prick. A sad little prick. And on the 28th, last Thursday in September, we are returning to a Treehouse of Horror of Babylon with Wanted Dead Then Alive, which is the Simpsons parody of Reanimator, starring Sideshow Bob as Dr.
Herbert West.
Herbert West!
Herbert West Reanimator.
Herbert West Reanimator. And I won't have to bring them back to the dead because they are here every month. Thank you to our patrons, Abigail the First, Breaker of Chains, Mother of Dragons, and
Logan,
the Full Metal patron. And Ben,
the Fourth,
Patron of Hope! And thank you to Four Horsemen Comics and Gaming, which you can visit at the Morgantown Mall in Morgantown, West Virginia, or the Mall at Robinson in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And they are opening a third location in Hamburg in this nice little beer hall. But then this funny little guy with a mustache tried to overthrow the government at this beer hall pooch thing, and Ron had to pull out. But if you visit one of the other locations, say hello to Ronald III, Grampus of Christmas, and sorry that your beer hall German of comic book store didn't work out, because I honestly love that idea.
Was it me? Was I the funny little man?
No.
I was waiting for a joke about Ron pulling out.
He has three children. That is not what happened.
So he's pulling out is for the weak. Roll the dice.
Actually, I believe he's only had sex three times.
That's 100% win ratio. That's great.
Based on his kitty litter adventures, I'm surprised he gets this far.
So, good. I mean,
very good.
Ron has fired the. If Ron is Luke and having children is the Death Star, then they have the same success rate right there.
Yeah.
No, Ryan, that's not true, because as Luke failed the first time and he had to go back and use the Force. Shut up, other Ryan. Okay. Thank you guys for rereading The Werewolf.
It was veritastic.
And congratulations to Daniel for winning the game, being the only one of us to not say. And I can say it now.
Werewolf.
Werewolf.
Good job, Daniel. You get a gold star.
I thought I was going to fail 2 minutes in.
Gold star for Daniel. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you to our patrons. Stay tuned for our socials, and stay scary.
Stay scary.
Stay scary, folks.
The werewolves.
Like the werewolves. Like the werewolves.
And now for the obligatory socials. Please like, share, and subscribe. You can find the podcast on Twitter at HorrorPod69. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Slasher, and Goodreads. Become part of the Disturbed community by asking for the Facebook group and Discord links. Send dick pics to the Horror of Babylon podcast at gmail.com. Support the show at patreon.com/thehorrorofbabylon. In closing, you can let your friends know that The Horror of Babylon is available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, and all other major podcast apps. Stay scary.